teleconference. Your participation is essential to our discussions on managing the Yukon River's vital salmon runs. My name is Serena Alstrom, and I'm the Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. We will cover key topics such as run assessments, environmental conditions, management strategies, and stakeholder feedback. We thank our funding partners, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and the Canada Chiefs Conference, for their support. These teleconferences facilitate communication across the 22-mile expanse of the Yukon River, enabling fishermen, processors, researchers, managers, and other users to exchange real-time information and engage in effective salmon management discussions. The teleconferences were designed to bridge communication gaps between local users and fishery managers. We aim to make these calls a platform for actionable feedback, providing insights and recommendations to management entities. Designing the topics of discussion and feedback format, we want to ensure these calls contribute to tangible improvements in fisheries management and provide updates on Yukon River research. We want to encourage fishers in the in-season survey communities to reach out to their local surveyor and share what they are seeing on the river. This program is a way for fishers to anonymously share their observations as well as their concerns or challenges with managers and the rest of the river. The in-season survey communities include Alaknak, Mountain Village, Marshall, Russian Mission, Anvik, Pusilia, Ruby, Tanana, Fort Yukon, and Eagle. I'd like to welcome all the new callers and the new board members as well. We encourage young fishers to participate in the calls to learn and engage in Yukon River fisheries. I ask all of your all the participants today to please be respectful of one another. This space is to be used as a communication tool between all users of the Yukon River. By working together, we can foster positive outcomes when we support one another. Gleana, again, for all of your time and participation. Just a reminder, as always, please press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Background noise and conversations are disruptive to callers who are sharing important information. I'd like to ask if there's any media on the line, if you could please announce yourselves. Do I have any government representatives or staff members on the call today? We'll start off with the Yukon area managers from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I'll hand it off to Dina Jalin. Are you online?
Hi, Serena. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, so for summer season, we'll actually start off with Josh Clark, who's back in Anchorage. He'll do summer assessment, and then I'll do the summer season management, and then we'll do fall season assessment with Bonnie, and then fall season management with Matt, who's out here in the Amonic office now. So, yeah, I'll turn that over to Josh, and then I'll cover management once he's done with assessment.
Hi. Can you hear me, Serena?
Yes, I can, Josh. Go ahead.
Yeah. So things are fairly similar to last week. We did get another batch of genetics in for the Chinook salmon, and things are kind of progressing right along. Currently, the projections for Canadian origin Chinook salmon past pilot station are very close to what we anticipated for the final preseason outlook of 24,000 to 37,000. We're sitting right at around 23,862 right now. The way things are looking with the upper end of that confidence interval at 27,882, that looks about like what we may be getting for a season total past Eagle Sonar. However, it's still too early to project Eagle Sonar at this point. We'll be doing that in the next few weeks once the run progresses a little bit more at Eagle, but it does appear that pilot station is tracking closely with Eagle right now. chum salmon, more of the same there. It's looking like, let's see here. My apologies. It's looking like chum salmon are in a similar boat. We're still going to be far below the lower end of the forecast. And it's at this point, we've got about 362,000 fish past pilot station. My mistake. 325,793 southern chum past pilot station. It does not appear that we'll be reaching the lower end of the forecast or goals for the chum on any of the systems that are being monitored. It's just a really poor chum year. Just reminding folks that this is the parent year for this year's run was that really poor run that we had a few years ago. So these are the offspring of that run. That's why things are so bad. But that's about it from assessment. And I'll just turn it back over to Dina.
Hi, yeah, thanks, Josh. This is Dina John with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game here in Immonic. And unfortunately, we don't have any real management updates to add for the summer season. We're continuing to transition back to allowing fishing with 4-inch nets in the lower river up through 4A upper. Folks can fish with their 4-inch or smaller mesh gillnets after we had that closure to protect Chinook salmon when all gillnets were closed. As a reminder, so if you're still in the Keokuk River, 4BC, and up in District 5, you still have to have your 4-inch or smaller mesh gillnets out of the water. You can continue to fish with other non-salmon gear like hook and line and beach seines and pike nets and dip nets, but you have to let all king and summer chum salmon go alive. Down here in the lower Yukon, we're going to start transitioning to fall season soon. And so in the fall season, those 4-inch nets will be open on a schedule, and Matt can talk a little bit more about that. And also once you get into fall chum or fall season, you're going to have to continue to release kings and chum. It's got to be releasing of summer chum and fall chum and then also coho. We were really hoping that the summer chum run was going to be better this year, but it just never really materialized. We've seen low catches at LITF here for chum. We haven't seen a lot of big groups come in other than one group that was a lot of fish a while ago. But counts at LITF and pilot are lining up really well. So the low numbers that we're seeing at LITF are being reflected at the low numbers that we're seeing up at pilot. So just unfortunately a small run for summer chum this year, and that doesn't bode well for the fall chum run either, unfortunately. So with that, I'll turn it over to Bonnie to talk about fall season assessment, and then Matt can talk a little bit more detail about fall season management.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Okay, I'm the fall season research biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and I'm going to provide some information on chum salmon and fall assessment. So as Josh just went over, the summer chum run size is well below last year with a projection of less than 350,000 fish. This is well below the average run size of 1.9 million for the summer chum salmon. And based on the relationship between summer and fall chum salmon run sizes, the draft preseason run projection from July 13th was estimated to be 194,000 fall chum salmon. While the average fall run size is over 950,000 fish. This week, the estimates have been slowly decreasing, and the final estimate will be run on July 19th, and then we're going to switch to the in-season assessment. So partially on the, to give you some on the chum genetics so far, the second stratum has been run from pilot station test fisheries, and it included fish from June 23rd through July 4th. It consisted of 97% summer chum salmon. Of those, 59% were bound for the lower river, 37% were bound for the middle river, and 1% were bound for the Tanana River. The lower river, or the lower summer and Tanana stocks were below average, while the middle river components were above average for this time period. The third stratum of chum salmon samples will include July 5th through the 18th, and when those results come out, they'll be in our daily updates. So lower river projects are going to switch to fall season beginning tomorrow, July 16th for lower Yukon testfish, and for July 19th for the main stem Yukon River sonar at pilot station. So the next strata, like I said, is not going to be sent until after we get all the samples of the from the summer season through July 18th. And once the fall chum salmon enter the river, we will provide stock assessment for the main components of three main fall stock groups. One is the Chujingjik, Xingjek, Dronjik group, the Canadian stocks, and the Tanana fall stocks. Escapement projects in the upper Yukon portion of the drainage within Alaska will be assessed with sonars operated at the Chujingjik and the Xingjek rivers starting up around August 8th. And the Eagle's average transition date from Chinook to fall chum salmon monitoring is around August 19th. We will be using these in-river assessment monitoring projects to determine if escapement goals will be achieved for the drainage-wide goal, as well as the goals on the Chujingjik and the Canadian components, Fishing Branch and the Yukon River main stem at Eagle. They'll also have running porcupine sonar. We'll be looking at that information as well. That's all I have. Matt's going to cover management strategies for this season.
All right. Thanks, Bonnie. Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Matt Olson, and I'm currently the acting Yukon River Fall season manager for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Yeah, as Bonnie was saying, the fall chum run projection is, you know, well below average and isn't likely to meet the lower end of the drainage-wide escapement goal of 300,000. And we would need to see that 300,000 to have any directed harvest on fall chum. The coho salmon run, you know, is also expected to be well below average. And so, therefore, we're going to start the season, start the fall season, close for both fall chum and coho. And then the use of 4-inch smaller mesh gill nets and manned fish wheels will only be allowed on the weekend schedule that we discussed at the preseason Yurtfa meeting and other meetings. So, and that'll be from noon Thursdays through noon Sundays. So in the coastal district and districts 1-3, including the Anoka River, starting at noon on Sunday, July 20th, the use of those 4-inch gill nets will close and will reopen on Thursday, July 24th at noon to begin that weekend opening schedule. So time for districts farther upriver hasn't been announced yet, but will be in the near future. And that's all I got for now. Thank you for listening. And I guess we'll go next to Shane Ramsey with the U.S. Wildlife Service.
Hey, everybody. This is Shane Ramsey with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I just returned from the Kayakuk Sonar Feasibility Project this Saturday, and we conducted bathymetric transects between the village at Kayakuk and the Gasasa River mouth. And while nowhere looked incredible, there were a few sites that seemed reasonable for a future sonar project. And in particular, we like the area near the Fish and Game check station, which is just downstream of Ella's Cabin and maybe a half hour or 45 minutes from the village of Kayakuk. We ran Didson and split beam sonars at multiple points in that stretch for about 2 weeks to get an idea of how fish swim through that area. But it'll take several more weeks to finish processing the data from our sonars. We continue to see a lot of support for the project, and the village of Kayakuk currently has requests in for funding to OSM with us and Tanana Chiefs Conference for 2 more years of feasibility. Then about 2 weeks ago, YDFDA finished deploying some buoys in the Yukon Delta as part of a joint project with us and NOAA to study how adult and juvenile salmon respond to environmental conditions as they swim through the Delta. In particular, we know from traditional knowledge that fish enter the mouths more often with certain winds, and we want to learn more about that relationship. However, the buoys often also output live wind and wave information that anyone can view, and you can view that on spotters.sofarocean.com. And we have a buoy in North Mouth, one in Middle Mouth, one in South Mouth, and one by Flat Island. So hopefully the weather information will be useful during boating through those areas. By the end of the week, the buoy weather information will also be available on a mobile app called Backyard Buoys, which was developed by the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission and AUS a while back. Then the Andreevsky project has been completely dismantled, and the crew is off doing habitat restoration projects in the Fairbanks area. Until they leave to start the Chujingjik sonar project by Fort Yukon in about 2 weeks. And finally, we're still planning on providing more whitefish opportunity this fall season, and I'll be finalizing some maps for that this week and next. So we'll have more information on that soon. So thanks.
Thank you. I'll now turn it over to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Do I have Jacqueline Kendall on the line?
Good afternoon, Serena. This is Jacqueline Kendall. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Okay, lovely. Hello, everyone. Again, this is Jacqueline Kendall. I'm the Acting Yukon River Operations Manager with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. And I'm going to give a bit of an update on stock assessment, environmental conditions, and we'll finish off with some Canadian management. So DSO technicians are on site at the Porcupine River sonar near the community of Old Crow, and they've been counting sonar files as of June 29th, with full day counts on both banks beginning on June 30th. The current cumulative count of Chinook salmon passing the Porcupine River sonar is about 180 fish as of July 13th. And just a reminder that these counts are preliminary in nature and continue to be reviewed as sonar aim is optimized over the season. We also have DFO technicians that traveled to Eagle, Alaska to support the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in the operation of the Eagle sonar. And counts there, as noted, have been underway since June 30th. We also have a number of Canadian projects for assessing Chinook that will come online or have started to come online, actually, over the last little while. And most of these are led and or managed by Yukon First Nation government representatives, and we'll be beginning to provide updates on those as each progresses. I'm just going to pause for just a second just to see if we have any Canadian Yukon First Nation representatives on the call that want to speak to their specific projects. And if not, then I can give a brief update on what we have so far. Okay, I'm not hearing anyone jump in, but of course realizing sometimes it takes a bit to come off of mute, so please interrupt me if you do come online. I'll give an update quickly on the Pelly River sonar, which is run by Little Sam and Carmack First Nation. It is now operational, with sonar units deployed on both banks, and Chinook salmon counts total 42 as of July 14th. And again, that's an estimate. The next projects we expect to receive counts from as the salmon migrate up the river are Klondike River sonar and Big Salmon sonar. So hopefully we'll have some updates for those maybe at the next meeting. In terms of environmental conditions, over the past week, temperatures have returned to seasonal trends, with daytime temperatures ranging from the low 10s to mid 20 degrees Celsius in many areas. The majority of lakes in Yukon are at average or below average water levels after the lows that were experienced earlier in the season. Smoke from wildfires throughout Alaska and central Yukon continue to kind of affect air quality with the highest concentration of risk surrounding Dawson City and Mayo region. In Old Crow, where our porcupine sonar is closely located, air temperatures have returned to seasonal levels after a pretty hot spell and minimal amounts of rain after those temperatures last week. Despite continuously low water levels, the water temperature has lowered to around 15 degrees Celsius recently. I'll finish off here with just a brief management update. In terms of Chinook, we are still very much in the Chinook season. DFO has closed the recreational fishery for 2025, and the current long-term closures in the commercial and domestic fishery remain in effect. And with the low forecast, there will be no opportunities to harvest Chinook salmon in the First Nations subsistence fishery again for 2025. Looking to chum, we are not in chum season yet, but with the low preseason outlook and some of the more recent information that we've been hearing, DFO has closed the recreational fishery for 2025, and similarly with Chinook, the long-term closures in the commercial and domestic fisheries remain in effect. And with the low forecast, there are no opportunities to harvest chum in the First Nation subsistence fishery anticipated again for 2025. So that's my update, Serena. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Jacqueline. We'll now turn it over to some organizational reports. Do I have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission online?
Jenna, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Janessa.
Hi,
this is Jasmine.
Okay.
Oh, hi, Jasmine. Go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Jasmine Bent. I'm from Huslia. Our in-season here at the Fish Commission has really consisted of working on, like, the foundational work we're doing, as we're still continuing to navigate separating as our own nonprofit from Ten and the Chiefs. So currently we have two staff, myself as the communications director and Janessa Newman as the stewardship director. So we've really been working to strengthen the internal structure of the organization and working to better support the tribes. While we're still developing our full engagement strategy, we've actively been participating in a lot of, like, weekly calls, trying our best to share updates on social media and strengthening our relationships with the fisheries managers. Thankfully, I've been able to call up Holly whenever I have questions, so that's something that we've been working on, too. We really aim to develop a better engagement plan to improve how we can communicate with the tribes and the public and the state and federal managers. So within that, we've also been learning from other tribal organizations as we continue to build out our communications and our reporting tools. So lately, we've been in coordination and regular meetings with Ten the Chiefs and working together to find ways to better communicate data and river conditions, specifically to the villages throughout the season, trying to figure out how to get better outreach to the tribes. And our focus has really been about providing more consistent communication across the platforms, especially during critical and timely manners like the closures or the major announcements. We've been trying to keep up with those and trying to get the information out in a way that's more digestible and also culturally relevant. And then we're also working to build capacity here at the Fish Commission. So we're in the process of hiring an executive director. So our next executive council meeting is tomorrow, and that will contribute to further progress within the hiring process. And on the communication side, we've just really been trying to work to expand our outreach. So you can find us on Facebook at Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission, on Instagram at Yukon River Salmon, and we're also available by email at communications@yritfc.org. And we really invite any feedback on how we can improve our communication efforts and more effectively reach everyone in the villages. Specifically people that aren't actively on social media or have internet access. So yeah, that is an update for me in communications. So thank you all. As tribes, I know we're kind of in hard times right now, and I just want to acknowledge that. We're all really learning to navigate this together. So I'm grateful for all the continued conversations and effort from everyone on these calls. And I will go ahead and pass it to my chair, Charlie Wright, if he had anything to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Jasmine. Charlie, did you want to add anything?
Hi, this is Charlie. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Charlie. Sounds like you're on the river.
Oh, I'm just getting back in the Anchorage from Equaq. I was over there fishing. I'm very blessed to have a friend over there to invite me over. I'm just driving back to Fairbanks right now, so I just wanted to thank Jasmine for the great report and listening in. Finally got the moment where I wasn't occupied during your meeting. I'm happy to be listening in, and I'll leave it at that. And I'll just keep listening and driving. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Charlie. And thank you, Jasmine. I'll turn it over to anyone on the line from the BBAYK group. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute and mute your line. Hearing none, I'll see if Elizabeth McDonald from Council of Yukon First Nations is on the line. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Do I have anyone from the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee online?
Hi, Serena. This is Taylor. Can you hear me?
Hi, Taylor. Go ahead.
Not much of an update on our end. We're just preparing for our in-season meeting. That's this Friday, July 18th. There is a Zoom option available, and the Zoom link has been posted on our Facebook page, and the agenda has been uploaded on our website. So if anyone wants to attend, please feel free. That's about it for me.
Thank you, Taylor. Do I have anyone from Tena Chiefs Conference online?
This is Crystal with Tena Chiefs Conference.
Hi, Crystal.
Hi, I have a quick update on just a couple of things. So I'm Crystal Lapp. I'm the Natural Resource Policy Analyst for Tena Chiefs Conference. I work under the Tribal Resource Stewardship Department. So we cover everything hunting and fishing related. So one quick update is that our department is actively organizing a response to the State of Alaska Department of Natural Resources, Yukon Flats Oil and Gas Exploration under our full board resolution 2025-15, which is to protect our waters. Most of the areas that are being proposed for oil and gas exploration are in critical salmon habitats in the Yukon Flats, over 20 river systems of salmon habitat. So we did create a tribal advocacy toolkit. It has maps and sample resolutions and sample comment letters for tribal governments or really anyone that's interested in learning what's being proposed in that area. The deadline to submit comment is July 30th, so it is coming up soon. I do want to offer that TCC, our department, we offer technical assistance for tribes and tribal individuals to get resolutions through the councils or to get comment letters. We always encourage people to reach out to us. Our general email is TRSP as in Paul at TananaChiefs.org. That was just my quick little update on some potential water issues heading in the Yukon Flats. The other quick update is that the North Pacific Fishery Management Council did make the decision to do the Chun bycatch environmental impact statement final action, which just means they're going to make a decision on what alternative or combo of alternatives they're going to choose. And that is going to take place in Anchorage in February 2026. Our TCC is a cooperating agency on this document, and so is the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission. So please keep following our social media or reach out to us individually for the latest Chum bycatch EIS information. But those are just the two things I wanted to flag. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Crystal. And
hi, Serena.
Oh, yes. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Sorry. It was my fault. I accidentally hung up and said unmuting, so my bad.
No worries.
Awesome. Just Elizabeth Yukon, First Nation Salmon Stewardship Alliance and the Council of Yukon First Nations. Just a quick update. We're planning our annual salmon ceremony and gathering for next week. Unfortunately, there were quite a few deaths in the Tezmenklinkit Council or the Tezmen area, so we, out of respect, Carcrest Pagus First Nation has reduced the dates, and it won't be co-hosted this year, unfortunately. For the Hakusti celebration, which is a big Tlingit gathering, and our annual salmon ceremony gathering is happening kind of at the same time. So we're just getting ready for that and expecting quite a few people up in the kind of headwaters of the Yukon River area. And some of the other work we've been working on is around a guidance stewardship document for beavers and beaver dam and salmon kind of interactions. Making some progress on that, going to work with some elders, and then host a larger workshop to come up with this, to kind of bring both sides in, both the science side and the traditional knowledge side together into the document. And some of the more habitat work is also including a temperature monitoring protocol that staff here are working with other Yukoners on, just as coming out of implementing the Canadian Chinook Rebuilding Plan. And, of course, we're also supporting First Nations with quite a few of their projects, so some of the sonar sites, carcass surveys, some stream walks, just different activities around that. And the other thing I thought would be helpful to share is one of the things we've implemented more recently on our side of the border is if you're out doing carcass surveys and handling the dead fish, so we're not impacting live fish at all or spawning, is we started to collect like the skins from the fish, and we're giving those out to local artists who then tan the fish skins and or fins. There's some artists who use fins for jewelry and stuff, and so we're trying to, even though we can't harvest salmon for food purposes, we're still trying to kind of keep a cultural connection to them in some way and still try to allow some of these crafts that can occur off the carcasses so there's no impact to the living fish. And just thought I'd share that in case there was the same opportunity on your side of the border for interested people as well. So, yeah, just wanted to share that. That's about it for updates. So thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I appreciate it. I'll provide a brief update for the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. Again, my name is Serena Alster. I'm executive director. We assisted with the Tribe of Ruby and the Yukon Koyukuk School District to help coordinate the Ruby Culture Camp that just concluded on Saturday. Very successful camp, a lot of partners involved in the culture camp. They were able to get a cultural permit to do some fishing, so it was really great. I heard very positive feedback on youth being able to go down the boat and do some fishing out there. We have a crew that will be departing out of Fairbanks on Friday to Eagle for our biotechnician training camp. Unfortunately, we did have to cancel the one in St. Mary's. That'll be rescheduled for next season. So we have a good group of people along the river that'll be traveling to Eagle along with a lot of partners as well. I also have a crew heading out to Beaver. They're working with the tribe out there to do some water quality sampling, launch some temperature loggers, and do some other baseline data tests. I'll be traveling out to St. Mary's and be working out of there for the next 3 weeks. So I'll be out on the river, and it'll be great to see everyone down there. That's a brief update from YRDFA. I'm going to now hand it over to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Matthew Keyes. He's a fishery manager in the Area M Fishing District. Matthew, are you online?
Do you hear me, Serena?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Serena. Thanks for the invitation. My name is Matt Keyes. I'm the Area Management Biologist for the South Alaska Peninsula of Area M. I guess just a quick update. So the June South Unimak and Chinook Islands fishery concluded on June 28th, and it was one of the worst salmon harvest years for the area. Sockeye was 436,000 for the entire June, and then chum was 160,000. To put it in a little perspective, the sockeye 10-year average is about 1.6 million, and then the chum salmon is 503,000 for a 10-year average as well. Pink salmon were also pretty low. We're not exactly sure why the low harvest. Bristol Bay is showing like they're projecting to be on forecast for their sockeye. It's possible just ocean conditions had fish traveling, migrating a different path this year, and they just didn't come through the area in June. We are currently in our third fishing period in July. Still pretty slow harvest. We have a new management strategy this year, where in the Shumigan Islands, if 1,000, Chinook salmon are harvested in the Shumigan Islands, we close a portion of that area that is, known to harvest high abundance of Chinook salmon. We close that for a fishing period, which effectively causes a 7-day closure between fishing periods for same year. Is there any specific information folks want or need? I can certainly address those.
Great. Thank you, Matthew, for your update. Through some community level reports. I'll start with the coastal communities of Tubac, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. Just a reminder to press *6 to mute and unmute your line. Calling on the coastal communities of Tubac, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay.
Serena, this is Virgil and Stan here.
Yes, go ahead, Virgil.
Is Keith still on?
Yes, he is.
Well, how many kings did they catch in the June fishery?
1,800 Chinook salmon, Virgil.
Okay, and you said that if they catch over 1,000 in the Shumigans, then they get closed? Is that what I heard you say?
It's 1,000 during its fishing period in July.
Okay. Are they still doing the test fishery to see how many immatures they're catching before the commercial fishery gets to go?
We did conduct that test fishery. We conducted it on the July 2nd, 3rd, and 5th. The final day averaged only 3 immature salmon. The immature salmon was pretty low on all days. I think the highest we saw was about 30 immature salmon per set. So, they have not high abundance this year for immature salmon.
Okay, being you're close to there, how are Chinook's kings coming in? Are they like everyone else, hardly any?
I think they're up to 430-some-odd king salmon through the weir. Their lower end is 1,300.
Yeah. Okay. I was just wondering, it's good to see you, that you're on here, so we can ask you a few questions anyway, but I guess you heard the part about the Yukon, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I think this is probably going to be the second worst summer chum count on record at Pilot, I think. it's not the second, it's probably the third. But pretty darn grim, I can't believe it. Okay, that's all I had. Do you have anything, Stan, you want to say? Stan doesn't have anything. Well, thanks.
Yep, thanks, Virgil.
Okay, thank you, Virgil. I'll move into District Y1. Do I have anyone from Nunam, Iqwa, Alaghnak, Imanak, or Kotlik on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute.
I wonder if we're muted back, you think?
You could press star 6, yeah.
Again, calling on District Y1, Nunam, Iqwa, Alaghnak, Imanak, and Kotlik. We'll move into District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Pilot Station, or Marshall. I have someone unmuted. District Y2. Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Pilot Station, or Marshall.
Hi, Serena.
Hi, Anita. Go ahead.
Hi, Serena. I had a couple people fish. One caught one whitefish with a J-hook, and the other caught a whitefish with one red salmon with a 4-inch net. And he fished one day, and that a person fished one day with J-hook at the beach, and the weather is back to south winds and rough waters.
Great,
hopefully
thank
when
you.
It calms down again, people will go out again and try with some pouring snit.
Great, thank you, Nika.
You're
and
welcome.
Then I heard Maddie Beans from St. Mary's.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Serena. Yeah, I don't know. Nothing much going on around here. It was a little too choppy and rough to go get the water temp, so I'll do it tomorrow. Rainy weather, a few smokehouses I see in town here. Look like some people drying and hanging and smoking some humpies that they got in the river, whitefish. That's about it. A lot of rain.
Great, thank you. Do I have anyone else from District Y2, Mountain Village, St. Mary's Pilot Station, or Marshall on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute.
Serena, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Stan. Go ahead.
Thank you. About 2 days ago, 2-3 days ago, the water dropped dramatically, about four feet. And we're getting this south wind storm. I haven't heard anybody subsistence out down here. It's been too windy and rainy down here. That's about it. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Stan. Again, calling on District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Pilot Station, or Marshall.
Hey, Serena, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Martin. Go ahead.
Anyone getting a report for Pilot Station so far?
No.
I'll give a short report. Weather condition, we've had rain in the last couple of days and water levels dropping. It's been fairly cool for this time of the year. It's always good for the salmon. So I don't see anyone, or I don't see too many people with the 4-inch mesh gear here. There's been some reports of some people drying whitefish and sheepish and pike to include maybe some sockeye, red salmon. That's all I have to report. Have a good day.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Martin. And this will be last call for District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Pilot Station, or Marshall. Moving on to District Y3, Russian Mission, Holy Cross, and Shagluk.
Hello?
Yes, Basil, go ahead.
Hey, guard. This is Basil at Russian. Our water has been dropping steadily for a while now, but it's still kind of higher than it usually is. We had my classmate had passed on last week, and so this whole week everybody was kind of busy helping out. But I don't think anybody would ask for a opportunity to go out and get some salmon or a moose for the feeds that go on before and after the funeral. But I didn't see any fish or fresh meat up there. There was a bunch of people where it's a tradition that people in town bring a dish to the family's house, and what's usually salmon and moose and all the what's in season right now, it was basically all whitefish, pike, and chi with a couple of sockeyes. But thankful for that anyways. And so this whole week, I've been pretty busy helping out with that situation. And there is some nets that are 4-inch nets that are set out in front of town. Not everybody has one, but there's a few. Our 4-inch net has not. We never catch one humpy yet since a few days ago, so that's kind of concerning. Usually we get them good enough to last a while. But the 4-inch net is basically giving everybody an opportunity to have some fresh food on their table. You know, few fish camps are doing their best to dry some whitefish and chi fish and pike, and even less with the dipnet. My boys were getting some less with the dipnets and a little more than usual. But we got the first big storm of the summer. Usually right now we're all done with summer salmon harvesting and usually waiting around for the bears right now. But since there's been no subsistence fishing these last few years, more locals, been heading down to the coast and trying to get some whale and seal to supplement our no salmon diets throughout the year. This year my brother and my brother-in-law brought my son and my youngest brother down, and they had a safe, successful trip before this weather hit, so I'm thankful for that. Everybody was thankful for a taste of coast food. And then we got word that one of my cousins down in Marshall passed on, and so we're mourning the loss of a family member again. So it's been a pretty rough week for everybody up here. Pretty much everybody's in the same boat. When something bad happens, everybody in town pitches in and helps when they could. But no humpies in the 4-inch net is kind of concerning. We understand, like I've been stating these last few teleconferences, everybody understands and respects the rules and regulations, and we want these fish back more than anyone else, and we would like the restrictions to extend from only in river to everywhere where the salmon are, because basically, if management or we were supposed, if we were to want to get the
hit the passage numbers, escapement numbers. I think we have to do a little more than just in river management, because these last 20 years it's not working like it was supposed to. So we proved we're not the problem. We just want to get on a level playing field. So, but yeah, it's been a pretty rough week, and water's dropping. It's been cold. Usually we're not fishing now. We're usually done with the salmon, summer salmon, and take a little break and get ready for the berries and the fall fish. So, but yeah, that's pretty much my report for Russian Mission. Thank you.
Thank you, Basil. Then calling on District Y3, Russian Mission, Holy Cross, and Shadwell. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Moving on to District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Caltag, Nalato, and Kaikuk.
Hey, good afternoon. Can you guys hear me? This is Nathan and Anvik.
Yes, Nathan, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, there hasn't been much going on up this way. We did construct a fish wheel and hope we're going to get a little opportunity to try it out this year, but it doesn't look like we are. Kind of sad to see that they took away the opportunity to use a fish wheel when that's probably one of the not most non-lethal ways to catch salmon. I figure they're killing more fish in their test fishery nets down river than they would be in on the fish wheel. But I did have a question on the, maybe to someone of the managers or the doctors or scientists who are so smart working for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game on the mouth of the Kuskokwim. Is roughly about 280 to 300 miles away from the mouth of the Yukon. And the mouth of the Kuskokwim was, or the whole Kuskokwim River has been, had an abundance of salmon this year. I see full fish racks and full smokehouses. Does anyone have a guess or an idea or any sort of opinion on what could be happening from the mouth of the Kuskokwim to the mouth of the Yukon and why we're getting so little bit fish?
Yeah, this is Dina with Fishing Game. Thanks for that question. I don't know if I've got a really great answer, and I don't know if maybe Bonnie or anyone has a little bit better. But one of the things to keep in mind is that the Yukon is an incredibly long drain. I think we're seeing some effects of maybe kind of poor ocean conditions, poor survivability, and not, our fish maybe aren't able to get enough resources and food and stuff in the ocean to make these super, super long migrations that they've got. I mean, the Yukon migration is just really, really long. So it is kind of I think that's putting an additional stress on our fish. But in terms of like why Cusco is doing better or why other places are doing better, like I don't have a great answer. I don't know if anyone really does. But yeah, Bonnie or anyone, if you got better, something more to add, that'd be great.
This is Bonnie. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, Bonnie.
Yeah, last time I looked at the Kuskokwim, I don't have it up right at the second. Their chum were still early and just below average, still trucking along. The difference also with Kuskokwim is they have sockeye over there, which if they're doing better, of course they're going to put those up for sure. And what Dina said, you know, about the Long River, I think is one of our biggest issues, is getting enough groceries to migrate that far. So there is a difference between the fish over there and here.
Thank you for that. I guess lastly, Serena, I just wanted on the moratorium for Chinook salmon, was that just decided by the state, the Department of Fish and Game, and the Canada side? There was no consultation with the tribes or the people that depend on the salmon? Is that correct?
Do we have any from anyone from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game who could answer?
Hi, yeah, Serena. I'll just take just a really just kind of basic stab at it. Yeah, so the 7-year agreement was part of the Yukon River panel, and so the parties in the Yukon River panel and the treaty are the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the Department of Fisheries and Oceans up in Canada. And so that was an agreement that the parties came together to try to help address these concerns about Chinook salmon and just try to put a little bit more just intention to these closures and just really recognize that the Chinook salmon, particularly the Canadian origin stocks, are in a really tough way and just recognize the need for a sustained conservation. So that's kind of why they came up with that additional 7-year agreement that's in addition to the Yukon, the Alaska and Canadian regular treaty.
Okay, got it. Thank you. I guess the reason I brought that up, because like the gentleman said from Russian Mission, we feel like, you know, we've been doing everything we can to bring the fish back, and we've proven that we're not the problem. When you guys go ahead and put a moratorium in place like that, that's how it kind of seems to us people living on the river. It kind of makes it seem like you're putting blame on the fishermen that depend on the salmon, when you guys should be really focusing on some of the things that's going on out in the ocean and at the North Pacific. I'm not sure, has any of the managers ever put in place some opinions or anything to the governor or to the, what's his name, Doug Vincent Lang, on maybe they should take a look at the hatcheries that they're pumping into by the millions into the ocean. I know that has a problem with the fish. As far as the size, so anyways, I'm just like a lot of other people, frustrated, so that's all I got. Thank you.
If I could jump in here for a second. This is Matt Olson, Alaska Department of Fish. And I just wanted to clear up that fish wheels are going to be allowed for non-salmon harvest during the fall season, but they're going to be on the same schedule as the 4-inch gill nets, so that noon Thursdays through noon Sundays. So I just wanted to make that clear that they are going to be available, but it's just going to be on that same limited schedule as the 4-inch gill net opportunities.
Serena, this is Ken Nandvika. I got a question for Matt there.
Yes, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, Matt, this is Ken Chase of Namik, and I'm the fish wheel owner along with the tribe here, and I had one last year. And I guess the question that you're talking about, opening it for the fall or after the later on to the fall season, and what kind of requirements are going to be there for returning fish that you don't want us to keep in place? What are we going to be allowed to do? We have to have a live trap or someone on the wheel, or what's the story there?
Yeah, thanks, Ken. Again, this is Matt Olson with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The fish wheel opportunity is going to be for specifically manned fish wheels. So there won't be, you know, any salmon that are allowed to be, you know, harvested from that. So no kings, chums, or coho. If you catch pink or sockeye, you can keep those, but it's going to be for whitefish opportunity, or non-salmon, I guess. So in terms of manned fish wheels, what that means is that when those fish wheels are spinning, that there needs to be somebody on the fish wheel and directing any salmon species that is designated to, you know, for non-retention. So any species that you can't keep directly back into the water. So they, as per the regulations, they can't be funneled into a live box. They have to go directly back into the water. So any way that is safe to redirect those fish, you know, straight from the wheel itself back into the river is kind of how we eat those fish.
Okay, so does that, are you saying then that the live traps that they use
in prior years up the river, et cetera, is not going to be allowed?
Yep. Yeah. The as per the regulation, any of those salmon species can't go into the live box during or using the manned fish oil regulation.
Just to add on to that, the reason why fish aren't allowed to go into a live box is to just reduce the stress that they have. So we really want them in the wheel and then out of the wheel and back into the river as soon as possible. That's why they can't just hang out in the live box.
Okay, I understand that now. Yeah, thank you.
Do we have anyone?
Serena, I have a couple other comments. This is Ken.
Yes. Yes, go ahead.
One of the things that I wanted the public here to know is that yesterday we had the count on the Anderick River locally, and there was a report of 29,000 chums past the counting station there as of yesterday, and then surprisingly, we had a count of 129 sockeye salmon past that river yesterday, which is very unusual for the Anderick River. So I don't know what that means for the future, but there's a little bit of life there. And for a river that used to spawn a million fish, 29,000 is just a teaspoon in a bucket, but maybe that's hope. I hope that's what's going to happen. And one other question I had for the escapement for future use on the Anderick River, I don't know who can address this, but we have a 300,000 chum escapement before we can do anything with them. And I don't know if that's been changed. At least I haven't heard that. And we were trying to get that down to, in the 100,000 range. So the escapement goal needed for escapement would be not too high above our head. And then the other one is the weir that's there now on the Anderick River is about 50 some miles up the river, I believe, from the mouth of the river. And I don't know how effective that. There's never been any reports on it over the years as how effective it is for counting. And I've had a couple of people over the years that wanted to move that down a little further toward the mouth. So I just wonder if that's in the works or if that's in the thinking of the Park and Fish and Game.
Yes, I don't know if there's anyone else on from research or assessment that can ask.
Hello, this is Tarek.
That is also, there is a sonar there, so they do try to count the fish that are going into the river at that time. And it's really kind of site-dependent where you can put them. There's been more considerations for moving that location, but that might be one of the best spots to have that running.
I couldn't get any of that. It's pretty spacey there. It's garbled up. I couldn't get what was the answer.
Yeah, sorry, Dina. We had some unmuted lines. Would you
okay, yeah.
A little bit? Thanks.
Yeah, I didn't have a whole ton to add to answer your question, Ken. I don't know if someone from research has got anything else to add, but up at the Anvik project, it is a sonar, and so sonars kind of depend on a particular type of site with a good bottom profile and all that. So I don't know if there have been considerations for moving that project, but there's probably reasons for why it's located where it is.
Yeah, well, the point I wanted to bring up there is that the Anvik River is a very moving river. It changes channel a lot, and silting and graveling, and that's been there for a number of years without any change or any testing, so I don't know. I was just curious to see if they had anything on it. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, this is Carl Fister, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. My station right now. But a number of years ago, it was probably over 10 years ago, we did look and try to do some site surveys for a site lower down on the river. We have not since done anything with that, just because there was a number of reasons. One, moving a site is really costly and we haven't had the money. Two, it was undetermined how we'd actually go about doing our apportionment. One of the things that's kind of nice at the current site is that we can use the tower and visually see the Kings, the Chum, the Pink. But when we go lower down, even though if we find a narrow spot, it ends up being deeper and we can't actually use a visual count. So we'd have to figure out how we'd apportion, and that was never resolved. But part of it is funding. I think our concern at the time was fish actually spawning below the site. That was when we had a lot more fish in the river, and we were concerned that there were numbers of fish spawning below our site and actually not making it past the location. But so we have looked at it, but hasn't been any follow through or any follow up since.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, last call for District Y4A, Anvik Grayling, Caltaj, Nalado, Kaikuk. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. We'll move on up the Kaikuk River to Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatnar, Bettles.
Hello, this is Charlene Brent in Huslia.
Hi, Charlene. Go ahead.
I did 3 surveys last week, all for non-fishing. There's a lot of people still out firefighting, and then a lot of boats are not working. So I've just been doing non-fishing surveys right now.
Great. Thank you, Charlene. Again, calling on the Kaikuk River communities of Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatna, or Bettles. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. We'll move into District Y4A and C, Galena and Ruby. Again, calling on Y4A and C, Galena or Ruby. Anyone online? Okay, moving into District Y5A, B, C, and D, Tena, Rampart, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Firth, Yukon, Chalkeetsik, Vinitai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle.
Yeah, this is Jude Henswick. Can you hear me?
No, this is Ruby. Can you hear me?
Hold on, Ruby. We do have someone ahead of you.
Okay. No, let Ruby go. I'm in the Tanana district.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Ruby.
Okay, thank you. I don't have a whole lot to report. Of course, no one is fishing right now due to the closure. We've had cooler weather and rain showers last week, less smoke. The river level is about the same. Some ways that people are feeding themselves without salmon are with moose, bear, beaver, and subsistence gardens. One household noted that he had only caught pike this year in his 4-inch mesh net where he had been fishing in a backwater slough earlier in the summer. I do have one question that I was asked to relay. A person that I spoke with, they were wondering what the impacts of no salmon are on local birds as well as migratory birds, especially in the fall. The birds were always present on the beaches, cleaning up salmon carcasses up and down the river. And so he was wondering, you know, if anyone has any insight into what that looks like for the bird, migratory bird populations. This came up in a conversation with an elder who commented that the ravens seem especially hungry this year.
I can get a hold of someone to do a report and answer that question next week.
Okay, thank you.
But they went back to the lake.
They must have gone back to the lake.
Okay, so let's see. Thank you, Ruby, for that. We'll move on to Tanina. I believe I didn't recognize the guy's voice.
Jude Hensler.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
A couple of weeks ago, Ken asked about the Kuskokwim. He did a little bit today as well, but I went and tried to get the information in past years, the differences between the Yukon and the Kuskokwim just on Chinook. And in 2021, the Yukon sonar at pilot station saw 124,845, and on the Kuskokwim, the sonar saw 102,549. And that's the only one where the Yukon was bigger than the Kuskokwim. In 2022, on the Yukon, the sonar at pilot station saw 48,439. And on the Kuskokwim, it was almost 146,000. In 2023, on the Yukon, it was 58,529. And on the Kuskokwim, it was 79,166. And last year, 2024, it was 64,128 on the Yukon and 142,622 on the sonar on the Kuskokwim. On Eagle, when the Yukon took showed 124,845, the Eagle sonar showed 31,706. In 2022, the Yukon saw 48,439, and Eagle saw 12,025. And in 2023, the Yukon saw 58,529, and Eagle sonar saw 14,752. And in 2024, the Yukon saw 64,198, and Eagle sonar saw 24,183. I'd be glad to go back and do that again if anybody wants me to. In other words, the Kuskokwim in all cases was much higher, except for 2021. The Kuskokwim showed many more Chinook than the Yukon. And it's all the same ocean. It's all very confusing to me why that would be so much difference.
Well, I appreciate those, the feedback, June, and I don't know if anyone from ADF and you would like to respond to that, but I think, like Dina said, is, you know, the Yukon is a lot longer river. It has a lot more tributaries than the Kuskokwim. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the conditions are definitely different. Both rivers are different.
And I'd like to get the pilot station number, current number for the passage at pilot station. I didn't get them. And I'd like to get it at Eagle as well, if somebody's still online.
Dina, do you have those numbers right off the bat?
I do, yes. Yeah. So we did publish the weekly update that came out a little bit earlier today. So pilot station sonar, the counts as of yesterday are estimated to be 57,375 Chinook salmon, and that's below the cumulative median count for this date of And then also up at Eagle, the count today is 2,995 fish, and that's below the cumulative average count of 6,176. So one thing to keep in mind is, like, the counts for Cusco, of those counts in around, like, 140,000, 150,000, that would be kind of like the minimum counts we would want to see for the Yukon. We used to have runs of Chinook salmon that were up in, like, the 300,000. So we've got a pretty significant decline of Chinook salmon on the Yukon
I've been tracking it for 50 years. I have a pretty good idea about the Yukon. Thank you.
Hello?
This is Andy.
Yes, Andy, go ahead, and then we'll have the next person talk.
Yeah, thank you. Quick report. Water levels here are very low. They're actually kind of like what they are in September instead of July and August. Just wanted to report that because I'm hearing a lot of reports of low water. And in regards to some of the discussion here on the Kuskokwim and the Yukon differences, I just wanted to point out that over the last 12 years, the Kuskokwim has had a dual management, management with the indigenous people there, co-management. And they always shoot for the high end of the goal. The goals, the escapement goals on the Yukon River and the Kuskokwim have ranges. And they have always shot for the upper end of those ranges to try and ensure escapement goals on years where they weren't real clear or confident in their numbers. They have reached their escapement goals, I believe it's 10 out of 12 years or 12 out of 12 years. I can't remember exactly how far back it went. But one of the big differences from my perspective is that they always shoot for the upper end of the goals. And on the Yukon River, we have always managed to the lower number. Sometimes we've had higher passages than the 43,000 that was the number. But management, in an effort to try and get fish to people, oftentimes, was shooting more towards that 45 to 43,000 range. So as fish decline in size, fecundity, productivity, not only did we not meet escapement goals, we didn't account for smaller fish with less eggs. And I believe that's a very strong reason why we are seeing the difference between the Kuskokwim and the Yukon River. I just wanted to share those perspectives. On the Yukon River, I was just looking back. The last 12 years, we missed our escapement goals. I believe it was 6 or 7 years out of 12 years, whereas the Kuskokwim River had a 90 to 100% success rate on reaching their escapement goals. That, to me, is probably what I would consider to be the biggest difference between the two rivers. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Andy. And there was someone that wanted to speak.
Hello?
Someone else? Yes, go ahead.
Hey guys, this is Basil Russian again. While we're talking about numbers, I'd just like to point out that bycatch numbers have been the same or higher than the total number of fish coming into the river without meeting any escapement goals. And there's been very little harvest, little to no harvest of salmon in river. And it's been going on for years. And I'd just like to throw it out there that when we first switched to 4-inch net fishing, I had a net down a little further down than everybody else, and then when we got home, my all the kids, you know, when the fish camp's going, all the kids are down there and the neighbors' kids are down there, and it's all, you know, one big family reunion down there. So I remember one time my fish camp neighbor ended up getting 100 small kings with a 4-inch net, and they didn't have eggs in them, and they were about the size of trout, and that happened only once since we've been fishing with 4-inch net. That's happened to us only once, where a whole lot of trout-sized salmon came into the river with the adult spawning salmon, and we were fishing with the 4-inch net, so we were able to accidentally get some of those, and we're not talking a little bit, we're talking about almost every webbing. It was like I said, he caught 100 tiny little kings, and he pulled his net out, and he felt bad, we all felt bad, so he pulled his net out, we pulled our net out, and we waited for a while, then we fished again with the 4-inch net. But that happened to us only once, and that got our attention. We got worried about that. I remember bringing this to the attention of the summer season manager during the teleconference when it happened. But while we're talking about numbers, I just thought I'd throw that out there. Thanks.
Basil, before you go on mute tonight, just get a little bit more clarification on your size estimates, because the size for trout can vary. Is it more like grayling or more like Cisco, or what are you talking about?
They look like big female humpies, but they were not humpies. They were about the size of humpies, a female humpy, but they were all kings. You could definitely tell the shiny skin, the look of it, the everything. You could just see it's a young king. It was not a hump. Those were not female humpies, and they were coming with the front of the fish. Humpies come last.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Basil.
I got one more question, Basil. What year was that, or when was that?
I can't remember the exact year, but it was toward the beginning of the 4-inch net fishing down this ways.
Okay. Yeah, and this year up at, so they catch, they do the scales, and so they're looking at ages, and this year up at Pilot, they've been estimating about 18% age for Chinooks, and so that might be some of those small male fish that do make up a portion of the run every year. So, yeah, thanks for passing on that account.
Okay, going back to District Y5, A, B, C, and D, do I have anyone from 10 in Rampart, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chilkeetsup, Guinea Tai, Arctic Village, Circle, or Eagle? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Okay, moving on.
Serena,
to this.
Are you able to hear me? This is Stan.
Oh, yes, Stan, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, we didn't have it unmuted correctly. Okay. So I haven't been on the Yukon for the last 2 days, but there's nothing at all to report. I mean, the water's still going down and lots of smoke and with the closure, you know, nobody's fishing. But there's actually there's a fair number of people at fish camps, say in the Rapids area where most of the camps are. But it's because everybody's cleaning up their cabins from all the bear break-ins. There's been like 8 or 9 cabins broke into now up there. Since last week, there's been a number more. So I think we're up to like 8 or 9. And just a whole bunch of hungry bears, and they're just looking for food. They even keep coming back to the same cabin sometimes. So that's about all I got to report. There's no fishing going on at all, of course. There was one guy with a fike net. He bought a fike net, and he put it in. I actually helped him And I think the day I left, we checked it for the first time, and we didn't catch anything, and he's told me he hasn't caught anything since. So he's trying to figure it out. A lot of people are watching him, because if it works, it'd be a way to feed some camp dogs. All right, that's all I have. Thank you.
Great.
Do you want to hear me now too, Serena?
Might as well. Go ahead, Virgil.
Yeah, well, this prior discussion brought me to some of my memories when I was on the Board of Fish, and that is one thing is this. I think the Kuskokwim went to 6-inch mesh for their commercial fishery in about 1988. I think they closed it first, and then they went to 6-inch mesh. And that makes a hell of a big difference, because we didn't do nothing. We've never, the 7.5 is the smallest mesh they went down to. And that was after a gigantic battle. And Stan and I and Andy, all three of us, were in on it. And I started on that damn battle back in the 90s. And that's basically what has happened. And so, but around here, like Stan said, it's been super smoky. And someone else said it's finally cooled off. Yeah, it's finally cooled off here, too, because we've been up in the 80s, even up in the high 80s, and been miserable because we're not really used to it. But now it's kind of rainy and not bad out. But anyway, that's basically all I've got to say, except that it's really grim. Even the REM guys are feeling it. If they're not catching any chums and they're not catching any sockeye, that means that there's just not that many out there. Thanks. That's it for me.
Thank you, Virgil. We'll move into District Y6, A, B, and C, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Ferby. Just a reminder to press *6 to unmute.
Hi, Serena. This is Olivia. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Olivia.
Hi, Serena. Hi, everyone. I just had one question, actually. I don't have an update. I've been, we've been traveling quite a bit on the river this summer, so I haven't had a lot of time to get updates from home. But I was sharing with folks that there was maybe going to be opportunities for whitefish opened this fall in non-spawning tributaries. And some feedback that I got from folks was concern for streams and creeks that were in the anadromous waters catalog, but folks have no longer been seeing salmon activity. And so I just wanted to ask ADF&G or Shane if there's any route to taking streams or creeks off of the anadromous water catalog or utilizing local traditional observations and knowledge to open those side streams for whitefish opportunity. Thank you.
Hey, Olivia, this is Shane Ransbury with USFISH Wildlife Service. I don't actually know what the state's process is for taking things off, but I do know that when we made those maps for this time, we erred on the conservative side. And so, in fact, we actually looked at the Anadromous Waters Catalog and kind of some other sources for where fish have spawned recently. And so some of those, basically there's more closed areas than what is actually on the AWC right now. So I think it would just be kind of a continued discussion if we want to start opening these some of these areas up. But I'm certainly interested to hearing specifics, like if anybody has ones that they really want to talk about and they, you know, can name them and know where they're at and can show me on a map, that would be super helpful to me. And that happened a few times in the Lower River in particular already. So, yeah, so if people are, if when you're going around, people are saying these kinds of things to you, if you can just write that down and let us know, that would be a huge help. Thanks.
Hey, Olivia, this is Matt with Fish and Game. I just wanted to jump in there and say, yeah, it's we can look into how we can get, you know, some of those areas off the AWC. I don't have a good answer for you right now, but might be able to get back to you with an answer after we dig into it a little bit.
I think also one of the things to consider with the Anadra's waters catalog is that, you know, those are waters that were identified as salmon habitat at some point. And if the runs were better, salmon might be able to move into there. So then you might like end up delisting and then have to relist. But yeah, I don't quite know how you would prove that salmon were no longer using a stream. It might take some sort of effort to maybe do like eDNA or something to kind of monitor it over a course of years just to make sure that salmon weren't still kind of sneaking up there. But yeah, so that's a really interesting question. I hadn't really thought about that before.
Are there any other comments or questions from District Y6, A, B, and C, Manly, Mentone, and Ann in Fairbanks? Okay, we'll move into Canada. Do we have anyone from Old Crow, Dawson, White Horse, Mayo, Pelly Crossing, CarMax, or Teslin on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. I will go ahead and open up the floor for any additional questions or discussion. Before people start jumping off, I'd just like to make an announcement that next week we'll be going from the headwaters to the Bering Sea. So we'll start in the with Canada and head down the river as we start fall season. Thank you guys for your time and your comments today. Appreciate it. Join us next week again at 1:00. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you, Serena.
Thank you.
Thanks, Serena.
Thank you.
Thanks, Serena.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Serena.
Have a good day, Stan.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a good day.